Countless Screaming Argonauts is brought to you by Shane Ryan and Seth Curry Saves Duke, a blog featuring sports analysis on the country's two most hated teams, the Duke University Blue Devils and the New York Yankees.
You don't even believe it. You're just writing it for because you know it'll get a little bit of traffic or whatever. It's really frustrating, I think.
I'd love for the Red Sox to not win another game.
They might. I think it's in play. I think Owen 162 is in play this year.
I'm quite a bit younger than the Penguin, but I picked him up about...
Quite a bit younger.
10 years later. When they stop the drum machine.
Right, so let's get back to a little bit of sports here, okay, for a few minutes. You obviously are a big booster of the Duke team and stuff. So what's your
– Let's be careful with that word booster. I don't give them a dime.
What's your – right, no, I should have used a different word. Support. Yes. What's your thoughts about what happened this year?
I mean – I just think it was a really bad luck game. If you can tolerate a few statistics here real quick. Arizona, there's this guy, Ken Pomeroy, I'll start there, who keeps really great stats and who kind of has these advanced metrics that, you know, in my mind, let you see the game in kind of a different way. And one of the things he does, instead of saying, okay, points per game as a statistic, he says points per 100 possessions, which more accurately defines a team's offensive efficiency just because – a team may play a really slow game, so they have fewer points per game, but that doesn't mean they're not very efficient if they score on 90% of their possessions or whatever.
Right.
Anyway, Arizona, who we lost to in the Sweet 16, their offensive efficiency was 133, which means that if they had had a 100 possessions based on their, you know, pace and output of scoring, they would have scored 133 points. And I looked, just for curiosity's sake, I looked back to, I think, 1997 when these stats began to be kept. And Duke has not faced a team that's played that well offensively in those, you know, 15 years, in those 16 Wow. years, which is just unbelievable. I mean, this was literally the best single-game offense we have ever faced. I mean, at least Right. going back to 1997. And you think of all the great teams we played in that time. So, I mean, my perspective is it's disappointing, but you just ran up against a team – that for whatever reason, everything went their way for one night. And that's the harsh part of the tournament, and it's also the beautiful thing of the tournament. It's a very tenuous thing. You can go
well,
out.
You know, in a lot of ways, it's a crapshoot. It always yeah. is. There's mm-hmm. always, you know, there's always a 40-foot three-pointer that beats somebody that you never would have seen coming, you know, or a missed rebound or a missed foul shot or something that changes the changes the whole thing.
Totally, and as you get more parity in NCAA, it just gets more and more like that in the sense that these teams are all so good that anybody could win on a given night, and we just happen to run up against a bulldozer, a blitzkrieg, whatever you want to call it. I'm a little fatalistic about it, so I'm not too upset about that.
Let me ask you this question about Butler.
Yeah.
Okay. So last year, I mean, Butler for the last several years has been making some noise. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten this reputation as being this great representative of the mid-major tournament team.
Yeah.
Can I interject here?
Sure.
From a non-smart person perspective, what does that mean, mid-major?
Smaller schools, less advanced programs.
There's six conferences that are called the big conferences. You've got right. the Big East, the ACC, the SEC in the South, Pac-10 in the West, the Big Ten, and the Big 12. Any school, Patrick, does this sound accurate? Any school that's not in those conferences, they would refer to as a mid-major?
Basically, yeah. I mean, do they refer to Notre Dame as a mid-major? Well, they're in basketball now. They're in the
Big East, yeah.
Right. I never would have referred to them as a mid-major before they got into the Big East, though. Mm-hmm. They were an independent, and that's...
But, yeah, a unique situation, I think, with them.
I just get hung up on language, but why not just say a smaller conference?
because they're not in conferences, or they're, you know, some of them are little tiny schools and some of them are very, very big schools. Virginia Commonwealth is a huge school. It's 30,000 kids.
Yeah, in some ways, Max, it might be sort of like a PR term, as in we do not want to be called, you know, the small school. We would prefer to be called a middle major. You know, I mean, it's probably something to do with that.
I think it hung up on language. I prefer things get called less euphemistically. And I'm thinking, the middle of what? If they're major, why are they mid? You know,
yeah, exactly. No, you're it's a good point.
But anyway, go ahead.
So anyway, so Butler is getting this reputation as being a mid-major that's really advancing mid-majors. And now I actually read somebody refer to them as the team that can't win the big game because they lost last year in the last minute. And this year they got – well, I didn't get blown out, but they certainly did not do very, very well. Is that unfair to them?
Yeah, that's just silly, isn't it? I mean, they last year they made a fantastic run to get to the final game that nobody expected, and they went up against a far superior Duke team, and because of their grittiness and their great coaching, they came within a half court shot of winning. This year they were not as good by a long shot. They were an 8 seed. They beat a number 1 seed they had no business competing with. They beat a number of good teams. They beat the other team that was trying to upset everybody. And then they ran up against the Connecticut team that just, you know, can't lose a game. And they had a terrible game. They shot 18%. I think what they did this year is remarkable. I think, you know, people always have to come up with that fresh angle. And too many times it's that stupid force angle like that.
Right.
This is not a disappointment for them at all. I mean, they should be incredibly proud, I think.
Yeah, that's hard to do, though, when you're feeling like you're a failure because you shot 18% and you didn't do as well as you were hoping.
I think that it goes back to the point earlier about there's so many voices trying to be heard that somebody's going to say it's the team that can't win the big game because
that'll get some attention.
The only way to wave your flag higher than everybody else's is to say something outrageous.
Mm.
I think that's true.
It is true, and you know, I mean, every time someone does something great, there will be that sports writer, often in the mainstream, I find, who will write the article like, you know what, guys, maybe Butler is a bunch of chokers, you know, or even more absurd, they'll say like, you know, maybe we shouldn't admire Cal Ripken. Maybe playing all the time is a sign that he's selfish, you know, like stupid things like that. They're like, yeah, people did write that, and it's like, you know what, you don't even believe it. You're just writing it because you know it'll get a little bit of traffic or whatever. It's really frustrating, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that if you get a certain volume in one direction, somebody will tack the other way, write the counterpoint, and say, hey, look at me.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
All right. One final Duke question. What do you think about next year?
Well, Kyrie, I don't know if you guys heard, but Kyrie is officially going pro.
Did he say – I didn't know that he did officially. Yeah,
He declared today. He's gone. Mason Plumlee, the word out of Durham, and this is – it's all conjecture at this point, but word is that he's going pro too. So we're gonna lack some big men next year. We're going to have some fun young freshmen. But if the UNC guys, Harrison Barnes and Drew Henson and Zeller, if they come back – I think the rest of the NCAA is in for a long year, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but it'll be fun, you know. We'll have the thing is, we'll have a lot of young guys. We'll have Austin Rivers and Quentin Cook. They're gonna be a blast to watch. I think. I think it's gonna be a fun team, a high scoring team, and they're just gonna shoot and shoot and shoot, which is, you know, if nothing else, it's a cool style. I don't know how much it can bring us to a title or anything like that, but I don't think we'll ever be bored watching Duke play next year.
So your blog is called Seth Curry Saves Duke, and in your heading you say that you write primarily about America's two most hated teams, the Duke Blue Devils and the New York Yankees. Yeah. So I thought maybe it'd be a little fun to touch on the Yankees for a while. We don't usually spend a whole lot of time on the Yankees, but Max and I are both Yankee fans. College Boy's a Yankee fan. Manhattan Man's a Yankee fan.
All right.
Denali's a fan of himself, so he doesn't. he doesn't count. But so some general.
Denali is a Yankee fan,
right? So we'll start off with it. We'll start off with an easy one. Why don't you just give us a quick overview of what you see happening this year?
Well, I mean, these first few games have been fantastic in the sense that we're just hitting the hell out of the ball. I think that's great. Teixeira has started hot. A-Rod is looking like he might have an MVP year if he keeps it up. And the caveat here is that we're five games into a 162-game season. But, you know, I love the lineup. I think it's great. I think it's going to give people a ton of trouble this year. The pitching, of course, is the big question mark. I think the bullpen is solid, but who knows what Hughes is going to give us. He looked awful in his first start. He had, I think, one swinging strike the entire game, which is a kind of a good indication of the fact that this guy just doesn't have very nasty stuff.
What, he hit 91 on the gun?
Yeah, no velocity.
Yeah.
Yeah. CC, you know what you're going to get from CC. He's great. And then the big question marks are Hughes, Nova, Freddie Garcia, and then AJ. I think he's going to have a great year, personally. I think AJ is going to be really good. I'm excited for the year. It's five games in. I'm super optimistic about everything. What about you guys?
Well, the big question, I mean, you know, you hit on all the highlights except one, and that is basically, you know, in a nutshell, is Derek Jeter finished?
Oh, boy.
You know, that's the only one you didn't touch on. And what's interesting is that he's not starting tonight.
Really?
Yes, he's resting tonight. And when you look at the lineup, it was Granderson and Swisher 1-2.
Mm-hmm.
And the first question that popped into my mind is, can you make an argument that this is a better lineup? And it's real easy to make that argument at this point in time.
I would say that anybody who, I won't say supports, but anybody who's optimistic about Jeter is really wearing rose-colored Yankee glasses right now. He came out. I mean, the big worry was that this guy last year, you know, all he did was hit ground balls. His timing is off because of his age or because of whatever. And he's not
even more now.
Yeah, and he's not driving the ball. And then he came in for the first five games this year and did exactly all those wrong things. Yeah, I mean, I'm not – I don't know. It looks bad to me. I don't know what you guys think, but I'm not
– You know, the difference, though, is that it's easy to look at, you know, a David Cone, say, or a Bernie Williams and say, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're done. But Jeter's a legend. You know,
yeah,
he's not. He's above and beyond any other ball player that we've seen in our lifetimes, I think, at this point. Or
yeah,
close
I mean,
to –
Maybe would you compare Mattingly? Maybe is the only one who's the only
with the
Yankee
same kind of cash. Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, saying that's not counting guys like Mantle and stuff because they were. I mean, I was a kid, a baby when Mantle was playing. You weren't
right.
even around, so you know we don't count them. But yeah, you know he's a legend, and how do you deal with that?
Let me put on my rose-colored glasses for just a minute. We've been talking about people making the counterpoint and tacking to the other side of the argument. I heard the debate several times over the course of SportsCenter reporting and conversations on Mike and Mike this morning. Are the Red Sox done? Nobody's ever won the World Series after losing the first four games.
Right. No one's won more than 4 minutes of the World Series. Yep.
They're done.
Derek Jeter has one hit in five games. Thurman Munson had one hit in his first 31 at-bats, and he ended up being a pretty good ball player.
Hey, Carl Crawford has two hits in his first five games. So, I mean, you know, that – It's tough, Max. You're right. It's really, really tough. And I'd love for him to prove us all wrong.
I'd love for the Red Sox to not win another game.
They might. I think it's in play. I think Owen 162 is in play this year.
It's never happened before. That's all
I
can
but,
say.
Yeah, exactly.
The first time for everything. A couple months ago, Max and I did a show with, I think it was Manhattan Man, or maybe it was Denali. I forget who. And we call, guess who's coming to dinner?
Okay.
And we were talking about having all these, you know, if you had a chance to have some guys over for dinner one night, you know, who would you want to go out with? So I was going to ask you, you know, we'll limit it to the Yankees first. You're going to have a little dinner party.
Well, no, don't limit it. Ask him the question that we ask the others.
Okay. Well, that was the question. You have a chance to invite three people over for dinner.
Okay.
And they could be alive or dead. They could be fictional or real. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Fine.
Who would you invite?
I don't know about fictional. Well, I don't think we went fictional, did we? All right. Whatever.
Hannibal Lecter. No, I'm kidding. I'll give one sports answer. I'll give one.
That's what I did.
I'll say one culture answer or something, and then I'll give one like novelist that I really like. See, this is a good question because you can't. I mean, just inviting your favorite player isn't the way to go because you know you have to judge personality and things like that.
Right.
Oh God, what's the guy's name? I read a great article about him. Spaceman Bill something.
Oh, Bill Lee.
Yeah, Spaceman Bill Lee. That's going to be my sports one because he's a fascinating guy who, he had his Ephus pitch, and I've just seen interviews with him, and he was just bizarre. I don't necessarily know he'd be good company for the other two people, but I'll choose him for my sports one.
He was wildly hated by Yankee fans and Yankees. I think it was Nettles he got in a big fight with.
Yes, he did, and he hurt his shoulder. Oh, yeah, that was a classic. That was during the 77. I forget which of the two.
Right,
but yeah, there was a big fight at home plate, and Nettles basically threw him down on his shoulder, and he separated his shoulder. He was never the same.
That's incredible. And you, I'm sure you guys know the story of how he lost to the how he lost the World Series for the Red Sox against the Reds with his with his Ephus pitch to Tony Perez, who just waited
and
waited.
Tony Perez hit about it. It may not have landed yet.
Oh, I just think that's one of the great stories because that was his like little novelty act, and this guy just said, "You know what? Screw you! I'm just waiting on this pitch, and I'm going to send it."
I mean, he's an incredibly interesting guy. You know, he said to Bowie Kuhn, when he was the commissioner of baseball, that he never smoked pot. He put it in his pancakes, but he never smoked pot.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. He would. I think he would be guest number one. He actually played with Montreal a little bit after, when he was in the
Twilight. He quit Montreal because a friend of his got cut.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he left baseball. I don't know if he left it for good or if he left Montreal and they traded him or whatever and he popped up somewhere else. But he left because they cut somebody.
Wow, that's funny. I mean, I saw – it doesn't surprise me. I saw interviews with him, post-game in Montreal, and the guy was just – I mean, spaceman is the perfect word. He was really out there.
But that is some answer for a Yankee fan.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I mean, well, like I said, you have to, I mean, like, what are you going to do, invite Derek Jeter over and just get platitudes for the whole dinner,
Well,
I mean, and I love Jeter, but I'm just saying, it's not the...
Oh, yeah, Jeter is...
You got to take it one game at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
We're just going out there. It's a team game. And we'll get them tomorrow.
I don't look at my stats. I just, I just want to win.
Totally.
Just trying to put a good swing on it.
Okay. Number two, the movie director, Wes Anderson, I think.
Pineapple Express? No.
The Darjeeling Limited, I think you're probably thinking.
That's what I was trying to say, and I ended up with Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
Close.
Similar movies. No, he directed The Royal Tenenbaums and Rushmore. He's one of my – I guess he's my favorite – to put on my pretentious glasses here, my favorite living artist. I would definitely have him over. He's one of my heroes. And then, gosh, I don't know. Pick a novelist. I would definitely, I guess, pick a dead man, Vladimir Nabokov, who's my favorite writer.
Wow, you are really cultured. Maybe too cultured for me.
Well,
I was an English major. Jeepers.
These questions are like they're tough because you're going to sound like if you pick Vladimir Nabokov, you're going to sound a certain way. We'll put it that way. But I'll take it. I'll take whatever people want to think.
that's great. Bill Lee, Nabokov, and Wes Anderson.
What a great dinner that would be, huh?
Yeah, because Nabokov was a real arrogant guy and kind of like very sure of himself. I mean, he was a genius, but he was very much like that. Bill Lee's crazy. Wes Anderson's kind of a quiet guy. It would be a fascinating dynamic. It'd be a fun dinner or kind of a disaster, maybe.
Or maybe a fun dinner with fistfights.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. I think Bill Lee would win those.
Yeah, and he may be the least likely to throw a punch too. He's certainly not a very good fighter.
No, that's right. Yeah, Nettles owned him.
Yeah, for sure.
As Puff, because whenever a fight started, he'd disappear. So that tells you about.
Wait, that's what they call Bill Lee. They call him.
No, Nettles. They called Nettles Puff.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's true.
That's good.
You're talking about our wheelhouse here. This is the prime era for our Yankee fandom. Not that we're not big fans now, but back in that era, I could pretty much tell you the middle name of every New York Yankee.
Yeah, that's funny because my stepdad, I grew up, I mean, the reason I'm a Yankee fan is because he grew up on Long Island in the, he was born in 47, so he grew up in the 50s and I guess early 60s before he left there in the kind of the heyday of, Mickey Mantle and Maris and all those guys. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I know a lot about that era in Yankee baseball. And then, it's not that I don't know anything, but the era you guys are talking about, I'm not as up on, I guess. So it's fascinating to hear this stuff.
Right. Well, for us, it was important because they had done nothing from 64 essentially to 76.
Right, right.
And that was when I was I'll speak for myself. That was when I was a prime Yankee fan. Those are the games I was going to. Mm-hmm. I was living down there, I saw the Joe Pepitones and the Horace Clarks play. Well, that whole era of that time, and they did nothing. I mean, it was a great year if they didn't finish in the basement or next to the basement. Mm-hmm. And then, by 76, they had turned it around. Steinbrenner was there for 3 years, and it started to change. But that kind of sealed that those teams, 76, 77, 78, that's what sealed them for me.
Right.
Yeah, I'm quite a bit younger than the Penguin, but I picked them up about
quite a bit younger.
10 years later.
Yeah.
And my sort of introduction to the Yankees was Munson's rookie year. I had a personal health problem and ended up having to lay around and watch a lot of TV and. Mm-hmm. And the Yankees
sounds like a dream to me. I don't know.
I'm not saying I was tortured. I had two Star Treks and a Yankee game on every day on cable TV up here in upstate. So, it wasn't the worst life you could have.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But I watched. I mean, I remember Horace Clark hit 270 or 268 every year.
Yeah, just about. Yeah,
that's funny.
And did not turn the double play real well.
But he stole 20 bases, and he was one of their better players.
Right, he was, and that was the sad part about it.
And
there's definitely a badge of honor, I think. Too, I mean, it's one thing I don't really get as a Yankee fan because I mean, the years I've been watching, granted, there's a long World Series drought, but I mean, they're always, other than 1 year in the playoffs. I think there's like a badge of honor to having gone through that. Now you guys, I think you've maybe earned these World Series more than anyone.
Oh, yeah. The 78 World Series, the 78 season, is probably my favorite of all time. And mm-hmm. Ron Guidry in my probably top three favorite Yankees. It was great watching Guidry pitch. He just win every time. It was unbelievable.
It was great watching him catch the Red Sox.
Yeah.
That was what was great about it. I was fresh out of college and I was, working and hanging out with some guys who were real big Yankee fans. And I mean, we were there all the time just watching and it was great. I mean, there was nothing could compare to that 3 or 4 months.
If I can tell you, indulge one more Yankee story. My perspective again is a little different because I lived upstate, but we'd go down once or twice a year on an excursion. You pay $50, you get on a bus with 60 other people, and down you go. And you'd sit in the upper deck, and people would drink their beer, and generally I was too young to drink in those days, but loved the game and. We went and watched the Yankee-Red Sox game, and there was a guy sitting in front of us, a group that were Red Sox fans. And it was, during the Carl Yastrzemski era. And Ron Guidriera, and this guy was – the Yankees were losing all day, and this guy was just giving us – Carl Yastrzemski is the greatest player in the world, the greatest player in history. Just Yastrzemski, Yastrzemski, Yastrzemski all day. And, of course, Chris Chambliss hits one out in the bottom of the eighth, and my friend Ron Rogers, who was sitting next to me, just goes, "How does the crow taste, fella?" I'm just like, yeah!
Right,
you
right.
No fisticuffs, but you know, we really couldn't say anything for most of the day because it was all Red Sox. And then, you know, Chambliss will forever, you know, have a favorite spot in my heart for scenes like that.
And those games are really the best, aren't they? When you have to endure for an entire game, like especially Red Sox fans, it's a
yeah.
And then when it turns around at the end, I was doing a semester abroad in Ireland, watching, and there were all these kids from Boston College. So the Aaron Boone game 7, all day, the whole game, and it, over there it was like 3 a.m. So the room full of like 20 Red Sox fans, and just like,
oh boy,
you know, as you know, with Red Sox fans, they're not shy about.
Letting you know their allegiance.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, it was just like the whole game, Yankees are losing, losing, losing. Then the end comes, and this was before 2004 when everything felt like destiny. You know, like Yankees could never lose against Red Sox, and here it was being confirmed again. And just this room of just dead Red Sox fans and my friends and I going nuts. Literally, like, take our lives into our hands. With the comeback and Pedro Martinez staying in too long, and then, of course, Boone's home run. It was just absolutely incredible. But, yeah, those really are the best when you have to suffer for a little while before the good stuff comes.
Yep. A day you'll never forget.
Definitely.
So, listen, we're getting down towards the end here. So I have a couple of nonsensical questions I wanted to ask.
Okay.
And being that you're talking about the Red Sox, we'll start there. I had really hoped that Manhattan Man would be with us today, but he's kind of recovering from some surgery and stuff, and he couldn't make it. And I know what his answer to this question is because he's told us repeatedly. But who would you say is the most hated Red Sox of all time?
Oh, of all time, huh?
Yeah, the most hated Red Sox. Well, of your experience.
Josh Beckett, easy.
That's interesting.
I hate that.
Manhattan
I
Man,
hate
it's,
him.
Manhattan Man's is Kevin Youkilis.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
Yeah.
See,
I mean, you can't mention Kevin Youkilis' name. Manhattan Man will get violently, you know, just flips out.
I'm sort of a weak hater sometimes, where I feel like there's things about other teams' players that I can like a little bit. And I don't know what it is about Youkilis, but I kind of find him funny. I feel like he would be the guy like. Cracking like horrible dirty jokes on like the bus ride home, like just kind of like a scummy goofball, you know? I mean,
right.
whereas with Beckett, I just see this smarmy, arrogant little guy with his hemp necklace, and I just something in me turns inside out. I can't take him.
Yeah, I have a similar feeling, and what's his name? The closer would certainly be on my list. I don't know. I have.
Yeah.
Papelbon, yeah. And if I could throw two more in there and be incredibly self-indulgent, Carlton Fisk and Dwight Evans were personal hated of mine.
Interesting. Carlton Fisk because of Thurman Munson.
Because of Munson, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because everybody, to this day, people don't realize that Fisk averaged 50 runs batted in over his career.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite gripes of all time is the guys who hang on and make it to the Hall of Fame because they play 25 years. I would rather see, and I think it should be more highly valued, the players who burn the brightest and burn out, which is why I think Mattingly and Guidry should be in the Hall of Fame because their greatness was unquestioned, whereas Fisk was just a compiler.
Yeah, I agree with you, and the worst case of that to me is Pete Rose with his all-time hit record. This guy, not only did he stick around too long, but he was his own manager. So he would put himself in above superior
players. And bet himself, too.
And he just created this record that's just all but unbeatable. And it really irks me, kind of, that he has this untouchable record just because of the position he found himself in. And it's just annoying, I think.
Now, what about Cal Ripken? Does he fit into that stayed around too long or stayed in it for the length of time? I mean, he's certainly not. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Not outstanding.
I do like Ripken because, and you've heard me say this is not something I'm throwing out for the first time. To me, the most admirable of the seven cardinal virtues is humility, and I think Ripken genuinely had humility. And yes, I did. I do think he stayed for the record, and I do think he would have retired, you know, 100 games or 300 games earlier had it not been for the record. But he was a great player, and probably still a Hall of Famer anyway, just because he was a great player. He is the prototype for the modern 6'4", I can still play shortstop, physical athlete.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
When I was young, Freddie Patek, who was my height, played shortstop. You know, the little quick guys, not that I was ever quick, but the little quick guys were the shortstop. Mark Belanger was a tall shortstop, but he only weighed 117 pounds. You know,
soaking wet.
And he was probably only 6'1 anyway. But Ripken said he came up as a third baseman, right? And they said – he said, I can play short. And he could.
And he did for a long time.
He did. And he played it brilliantly, and he hit bombs. And so he's legit in my mind.
Well put. I think that would be my answer too.
All right. Next question. Breakfast for supper, great meal or greatest meal?
great. Not quite greatest, but still pretty great.
Okay.
Yeah, great.
That's fair.
Yeah, great. I had a bowl of cereal tonight.
It is. I mean, it really does come through in the clutch sometimes, though. I mean, just like
– Doesn't
yeah,
it? Sure.
Yeah.
A couple of waffles.
Yeah, yeah, some eggs and sausage, definitely.
Yeah. Sure. All right, how about this one? Fruit in your beer, yes or no?
Oh, you know, guys, I hate to admit it, I'm drinking a Newton's Folly Granny Smith draft cider right now. and while it was the six pack was purchased by my girlfriend, you know, I can't lie and say that it's not my that I don't like it. So I mean, from that you can probably get the idea that yeah, I mean, like I'm a dude who will drink sangrias. I think like blackberries and wine is a good taste. Yeah, I'll put fruit in the beer, definitely.
Okay, for sure. All right, I got one more. This one came from College Boy.
Okay.
And this is one of his standard questions. And that is, just how many fourth graders do you think you could take at one time?
That's a good question because here's the thing. I think I've considered this before. If the fourth graders were programmed to come at you without fear, they would eventually overrun you. But a normal fourth grader with their normal, like, fear capacity, I think I can maybe hold them off for quite a while because of their, like, natural fear of, like, getting kicked by a guy who's 28 and, like, big, you know?
Right.
Those fourth graders, but for the purpose of the question, let's assume that they're zombie types who are just coming at me in waves. I think I could successfully fight off 38 fourth graders. The 39th one would mean death for me in there.
All right. Now, do you think that you would grab one by the ankles and swing them around?
That's a good idea. Yeah, I think just like complete viciousness.
I always worry about fourth graders because they still bite. You know, and when push comes to shove, if you're standing there in the middle of a pile of fourth graders and one of them bites you on the leg,
right,
you're gonna go down. And that's it. It's like in Seinfeld.
It's like a gazelle. You know? They go for the Achilles tendon.
You go down, you're done.
You get one on the leg, the artificial hip, and you're down like a gazelle. You know, and then the next one just jumps on your head and it's over.
Two
would be it.
Well, listen, this has been a lot of fun, Shane. I really, really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. Definitely.
It was really fun. Anytime. This is you guys are very funny.
All right. Well, great. Thanks. You're definitely invited back. We'll have to get you on.
Oh yeah, we'd love to have you on. You know, to talk sports and talk other stuff too.
Cool.
Because you were You were great. You were really, really good.
Yeah, well, thanks again. No problem, guys. I really, really appreciate you having me. It's my, it's only the second podcast I've ever done, and the first one, the audio failed on it, so it didn't come through. So, I guess I'm still learning the medium, but yeah, I hope it was, okay.
Bye. Bye. My primitive ancestry, which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck free. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason off and countless screaming Argonauts, new bird of friendliness, like guardian angels, it's always near. Who can hear in the alley by the light switch? Who watches the...
Hi, this is Miss Nicole of 8 Beer Sampler Productions. You've been listening to Max and T-Fab-P, the fabulous penguin of Countless Screaming Argonauts, the podcast of record. Listen to their podcast adventures at csapodcast.blogspot.com or download it free from the iTunes podcast store. Just search Countless Screaming Argonauts. The boys love to hear from you, so email them at csapodcast@gmail.com. Finally, if you want to show your allegiance to the show, pick up some CSA swag and help make the boys famous. You can purchase hats, shirts, and mugs, along with other appropriate gear, at Cafe Press. Click the link on their webpage. And thanks for listening.